Boyz II Men's amazing. People don't give them
credit. I saw them live a couple years ago. They're still very, very, very good.
Just three guys now, though, right?
Yeah.
That's a bummer.
And they have, breaking news, become men.
Hi, I'm Mark.
And I'm Nicole, and this is Nevermind the Music.
Nicole, do you have a favorite Stevie Wonder song?
I think Stevie Wonder for me is one of those artists that, like, when I hear the song, I'm like, oh, right, like, this is a Stevie Wonder song. Like, Carole King, you listen, you're like, oh, all of these are great songs, and they're all Carole King.
Every song is a Carole King song.
Every song. Like, you listen to Tapestry, and you're like, how are all these songs awesome?
Yeah, that's right.
And I feel that way with Stevie Wonder. Like, when you tell me what the Stevie Wonder song is, I'm like, of course, I love this song, but I can't, like, recall them.
What about the song we're talking about today?
Well, yeah, I know that because okay.
Because I love this era. This is they call it the classic period of Stevie Wonder, the 70s stuff. Like, you know, there's the I Just Called to Say I Love You era in the 80s, but Superstition, You Haven't Done Nothing. I like the funk Stevie Wonder.
Yeah,
right?
I watched the music video for the song, and it is like, it is a scene, man.
Yeah, I love this 70s Stevie Wonder. And this album comes from right in the middle of that period. This is from Inner Visions. We're talking about Don't You Worry About a Thing.
Don't you worry about a thing. Don't you worry about a thing, mama. Cause I'll be standing on the side when you check it out.
So this one's not as much the like kind of funk that you hear in something like I Wish or Superstition or something like that. It's got this cool sort of Latin-y percussion with jazziness to it. Just so cool. Only reached number 16 on the Billboard Hot 100, which for Stevie Wonder, I feel like
that's wild.
Is a great disappointment, maybe considering how many hits this guy has. But what I want to talk about is something we hear in the very first few seconds of this song. We're talking about descending chromatic scales. Listen again. So we've talked about scales in this podcast before. We've talked about major and minor scales. This song is in what we call E flat minor. This is what an E flat minor scale sounds like, everybody.
Four flats.
Four flats.
Yes.
We're trying this again? It's not four flats.
No.
No.
Three flats?
No.
B, E, A?
Are we going to do this every time I say what key? Are we going to guess?
Yes. I'd love to.
E-flat minor has six flats.
What? That is a lot. You're going to tell me C-flat is an actual note.
E-flat minor has six flats, Nicole. And yes, one of them is C-flat. And no, don't tell me that's a problem. C-flat is a real note.
Ooh, I feel like it's a problem.
We are going to come back to this another time. Okay. C-flat deserves to exist. E flat minor, whatever, that's not the point. This little fragment at the beginning of the song. Sure, this song is in E flat minor, but what this uses is part of the chromatic scale. Chromatic, C-H, like Nicole. C-H-R-O, chromatic scale. That scale sounds like this.
Ugh. I hate it.
You hate it. Okay. So, all right. So take two notes in music like C and D, right? We call them C and D, Do and Re. Those are a step apart from each other. Follow me?
Yes.
Most letter names, most of the, you could say the white keys on the piano, most of them are a step away. Not all of them, but let's put that on the side for now.
Okay.
There's a note between C and D. It's called either C sharp or D flat. There's a note between C and D. So the distance between C and D is a step. What's the distance between C and that middle note, C sharp?
I think that's a half step.
That's a half step.
Nailed it.
Also called a semitone, which means half step, because we need two words for everything. So what we have most scales we use, major and minor, are a mix of half steps and whole steps. Most scales we use both halves and wholes. The chromatic scale is all half steps. Chromatic suggests it is colorful, chrome, right? It comes from the Greek root. I'm pretty sure it's Greek.
Chroma. For, And Paul Simon, Kodachrome.
Yeah. Kodachrome, that's right. Mm-hmm. Paul Simon talking about chromaticism. Mm-hmm. No, so chromatic scales means only half steps, which means on the piano, for example, it's using every single note there is. All 12 of them. You got C, you got C sharp, you got D sharp, etc. Whereas most self-respecting scales skip some of the notes. Now, there isn't a lot.
I'm laughing at self-respecting scales. Like, the scale has feelings now.
The scale does have feelings. And
I believe it.
Lots and lots of good music mixes it up, right? You've got a song maybe in E flat, and then it's bringing in some chromatic stuff, some stuff out of that scale, out of that key, as we would say. Very little popular music is fully chromatic, like just a bunch of chromatic scales going up and down. Usually, we've got to have some whole steps, some other intervals in there. But in any case, what we have at the beginning of this tune, what we have is a descending chromatic scale in the piano. And that becomes the thing of this song. At least one of the things of this song. So chromatic scales are all over the place in pop music. Not necessarily just as a ridiculous sounding rising and falling scale like I played, but built into the song itself.
You're just too good to be true. Can't take my eyes off you. You'd be like heaven to touch. I wanna hold you so much. At long last, love has arrived. And I thank God I'm alive. You're just too good to be true. Can't take my eyes off you.
That song creeps me out so much.
You mean the stalkerness of it?
Yeah, it's like really bad. Like something about what I'm learning, this chromatic scale, this descending chromatic scale, like makes me nervous.
So we're hearing it in the, for those of you with headphones, it's your left ear. You're hearing the vibraphone part, that chimey sounding percussion instrument playing chords that have a descending chromatic line. And this one falls all the way, by the way, everybody, that's Can't Take My Eyes Off of You, which is, that version's the Frankie Valli version, which popularized it.
And popular from the movie Coneheads, too.
From the movie Coneheads. I don't remember the movie Coneheads. I do remember the Lauryn Hill cover, though, which is dope.
Oh, that's
good. Really good. So that goes a whole 8 half steps down. And there is a sense of almost impending doom from that descending scale. It's such a beautiful song. You think it's creepy? Maybe that's why. I don't think it's creepy, but this goes way back. People using chromatic scales. How about way back, like 1749, J.S. Bach, Mass in B minor, Crucifixus.
I mean, I think Bach is like the best one.
The
right?
best one. The best of the best Bach of family. J.S. Bach. What do you mean?
Yeah, he's my favorite Bach for sure. But I think I like him. Beethoven, Mozart. Like, I like Bach the best.
You like Bach. Bach's pretty good. That was Philip Herwig with the Collegium Vocal Gent in Belgium doing Crucifixus. And that goes back so long. But yet there we have in the cello part, the low strings, a descending chromatic line. Is that too old? Do we need something less old?
Like, I mean, it just shows that like how far back these like conventions go, right? Did they call it that in the Bach era? Did they call it a descending chromatic line?
Well,
or did they just know that it...
Bach would have used German. So sure. I don't know what they call it in German.
Come on, Mark.
So that's a passacaglia, which means a repeating bass line. And the repeating bass line in that case happens to be a chromatic bass line. If we wanted a newer example, which I don't know that you need, Boys to Men.
Ugh.
Thank You from 1995.
More.
Descending chromatic line, not in the high voice, not in the bass, but in the middle part.
They're so good. People don't give Boys to Men enough credit.
I agree. Boyz II Men's amazing. People don't give them credit.
I saw
credit
them live a couple years ago. They're still very, very, very good.
Just three guys now, though, right?
Yeah.
That's a bummer.
And they have, breaking news, become men.
It happened?
It happened.
Are they just men now?
They're just men.
Yeah.
They're trying to keep it going, Boyz II Men, but it's very clear.
Are we going to talk about Boyz II Men again in this podcast?
I hope we will. Yeah. Can we just do one about Boyz II Men and like a cappella in general?
We can do it. In this case, that middle line being a descending chromatic line feels like it just is this weight that pulls us down, just pushing the music forward and forward and forward.
Do you like to laugh, geek out on music, and learn all about that band or artist who had that one song back in the day, but then seemed to fall off the face of the earth? If so, you need to subscribe to One Hit Thunder. Together with an array of interesting and hilarious guests, we do a weekly dive into one-hit wonders like Eiffel 65's Blue, Krayshawn's Gucci Gucci, EMF's Unbelievable, Delamitri's Roll to Me, Los Del Rio's Macarena, Musical Youth's Pass the Dutchie, and even Patrick Swayze's She's Like the Wind. So are you subscribed to One Hit Thunder or what? As Desiree would say, you gotta be. And as K7 would encourage, you gotta come baby come and join in on the fun of the One Hit Thunder podcast.
All right, back to Don't You Worry About a Thing. We start with just this little piece of a descending line. It's only four notes. But a few moments later, we get it extended a little bit in the verse.
Everybody's got a thing, but some don't know how to handle it.
So here we have it descending all the way down a full five notes, almost halfway. We've got 12 different note options, right? So it takes five half steps, covering six total notes in the scale. And it outlines this kind of funky, jazzy chord progression. It's got augmented chords. It's got seven chords, but what we get following along on the top line of the piano, let's emphasize it, a descending line.
Everybody's got a thing, but some don't know how to handle it.
And it hangs out on that last note for a little bit, but we get halfway through the scale, all chromatic. It gives us this color, it gives us this gravity, this propulsion, moving the piece forward. What are you thinking?
Well, I'm just thinking about what he's singing about saying, like, don't worry about anything. And, like, everyone's got something they worry about, but, like, don't worry about a thing, right? And how you're saying that this descending chromatic scale pulls us down, and you can feel that. And it's just, I'm thinking of the dichotomy between those two things. That he's saying, don't worry, but the music is, like, kind of giving us that feeling of being pulled down, that feeling heavy.
Yeah, I mean, it's strange because this is a very happy song in general, but there is kind of an inevitability to the chord progression created by this.
Yeah.
And this album, Inner Visions.
It's great.
This album's got Higher Ground. It's got Living for the City. Mm-hmm. It's a great album, but also it's a heavy album. Like,
yeah.
Living for the City is not a casual, fun song. It's amazing, but it's protest music, right?
Yeah.
And so this sort of lighthearted take of his style on this record does have this sort of weight. And a lot of that maybe is sort of just coming from the jazz influence, some of the Latin influence, but you feel it. And it does give the song a little more gravitas than it would if it was just the lyrics on the page without this kind of musical treatment.
So when you talk about this descending chromatic scale, for me, when I listen to it and all the songs that you've played, they really do, like, bring me down a little bit. Like, even though the lyrics to the Stevie Wonder song are so bright and like mirroring resilience and teaching us that even though you are worried, you can still overcome and be your best self through that worry and make change through that worry. But the music is leading me down this like mental rabbit hole of concern. Mark, do you ever like find yourself just lost in your own worry, even though you know you shouldn't be worried about things, that your worry isn't going to change any of it, but you still kind of, you can't help but get there?
I feel like that has been a thrust of me of trying to like become more mature and become a functioning adult, is not letting that get to me, because I think my tendency is to be low-key anxious about stuff that's happening all the time.
Yeah, good. Well, I mean, not good, but like this idea.
Good for you,
good
Mark.
For you.
Good
like,
for
you're
you.
You're a fully formed human full of anxiety, right? And I think we all have different baseline levels of anxiety interpersonally, for sure, some more than others. Now, for you, do you find any merit in worry? Like Stevie Wonder saying, don't worry about it, but like there are functions to worry. Is there any time you can think of that worrying has been like good for you?
I think worry for me is a positive thing if I can do something about it. Worry is the thing that gets me to set a calendar reminder to email my students a thing. Without the worry that I'll forget that, I probably would just sit on my butt all day long and do nothing. The problem is worrying about a thing I can't control or that's out of my hand, that's too late. I think back to like thinking of some of my highest points of anxiousness and stuff, you know, doing an audition or sending out an application for grad school or something. And once I put that thing in the mail or email or whatever out of my hands, there's nothing I can do about it. That worry just sucks. It doesn't help. It doesn't anything because it's too late to do anything about it. It's too late to set the calendar invite, right? So I feel like without worry, I'm way less productive. I'm way less creative on some level because I have this worry every time I write a song. I'm sure we'll talk about this again.
Yeah, it's so funny. Like I'm the opposite way. Like I'll worry to the buildup of something. And then once it's out in the world, I don't worry about it at all anymore because I realize there's nothing else I can do about it. Well, I surrender.
I think that's the maturity that I was mentioning. I think my path to actual adulthood is the path of learning to let go once I can't do anything about it anymore.
And that's what I think Stevie Wonder's talking about in the song is like, don't just let go and know that someone will be there to catch you and someone will be there to help you pick up the pieces if you need it, but just to trust yourself and let go. So what we're talking about is like conscious worry that like you actively worry about stuff and you know you're doing it. But there is a huge school of thought in psychology that we have a lot of unconscious worry that manifests in our dreams. Carl Jung, who we'll talk about in another episode, was really interested in this like subconscious rumination. And that's what you're describing. We'll use the term rumination, that you can't turn it off. It's like a cycle in your brain.
You're spinning out about it.
You're spinning out about it, right?
Awake, yeah.
So that happens while you're awake, but what are some things that happens while you're sleeping in terms of how we manifest worry? Do you ever have anything that you would classify as like a recurring anxiety dream?
I am really happy to say that I'm just too tired all the time that I don't remember my dreams anymore. But when I was in my 20s, I used to have a recurring dream of my teeth falling out.
Sure.
And it would happen probably once a week for 2 years. And I'm pretty sure I was grinding my teeth. Mm-hmm. And so I was dreaming of the gradual destruction I was bringing upon my own jaw. And I would wake up with an aching jaw sometimes.
Well,
like,
yeah.
And I think it was probably related to anxiety I was having and not being able to properly like find peace with that anxiety.
Yeah. You know what? Having your teeth fall out is the most common dream.
Is it?
That people would report. And in different cultures, it means different things. But you know that feeling and your teeth are falling out and you like spit them out into your hand in a dream. And you're like, oh, what's happening? Like that anxious feeling.
Yeah.
And they map it back to different things based on culture. So some people in our American culture will say that your teeth falling out signifies that you're self-conscious about something.
Mm. Well, that tracks.
And that tracks, especially at that age, like mid-20s. Like that's when you are like you're feeling like an imposter a lot of the time. And so that's one thing. And then in other cultures, teeth falling out symbolize that someone close to you is going to die soon.
Wow.
Which we don't really attach to that in our, we're trying to keep dream interpretation like light and fluffy here in America. But for me, I always have the same anxiety dream before the start of a semester.
Mm.
Every time. Usually it's getting earlier and earlier now, but like probably mid-August it starts that I'm back in high school and I'm about to go and perform a play on stage and they changed my part last minute and now the play's a musical. And I have to learn all the songs and I don't know the songs and I like freak out backstage. And I either have that as an anxiety worry dream or I'm on campus. I'm a college professor. I can't find my classroom. I'm going to be late. I don't have I can't email the students to tell them I'm late. I don't have my notes. I don't have a pen. I get in an elevator and it takes me to Spain and I'm all the way in Spain and my class is in New England and I can't get back there. And all of these are like my anxiety dreams and they're helpful to me because then I wake up. and I double check my syllabus. I double check my notes. I like double check everything. It's like self-preservation. And Carl Jung said, and a lot of theorists say, that this worry is so helpful for us because it makes us ensure that we do the task we have to do. You're advanced because you're doing this in your waking life. Your worry is helping make sure that you book the appointments. And
I'm just on another level.
You're just like an upper species. But Carl Jung and Freud said that like that subconscious worry is so protective and so helpful for us. So when Stevie Wonder saying don't worry about a thing, I'm like, no, I kind of challenge that. Like, I want to worry about stuff because it helps me get my shit done.
I feel like this song, he's saying don't worry about a thing, but he's giving us this descending chromatic line. He's giving us the worry. The rest of this album, I'm not going to speak to every song, but a lot of this could almost be said to be about those worries and stuff. So they're present, especially if you're consuming this, not as a single, but as the 1970s album-oriented sort of approach where you're listening to them all as a package. And like that worry is there reflected in the music through this kind of tension of the very catchy, cool, but also kind of anxious descending line. But then the words and the chorus, the hook, the don't you worry about a thing, which notably does not have a descending chromatic line.
Mm-hmm. It's so bright.
He's telling us, let it go.
Yeah.
So in one of the verses, they say your style of life's a drag and that you must go other places. But just don't feel too bad when you get fooled by smiling faces. He's talking about the things that would give us worry and would give us anxiety while that chromatic line is happening. And then it turns off in the hook.
It is this dissonance, right? That we experience in our daily life is that we know that everything's going to be okay. And I think fundamentally we do know that. But still, we live in a society that is setting us up to worry about everything. And trying to find the balance of that, I think he's doing that, I'll say harmonically in the song, which is probably not the right word, but he's doing that in this song. He's like finding a middle ground between this like innate worry that we all feel and this also human desire to have resilience and persevere and kind of rise above that worry. And I think that's a really interesting dichotomy that he's exploring in this song, whether or not he means to or not. Like that's what I read from it for sure. I think it's really fascinating.
Would it surprise you to say that I'm not done, that it gets even more?
Oh, I'm sure it does.
Yeah,
tell me
it does.
More.
So listen to the middle of the chorus. We know the chorus, right?
But don't you worry about a thing. Don't you worry about a thing, mama. Cause I'll be standing on the side when you check it out.
Let me draw your attention to the very middle of that. These chords that all go down quickly, chromatically.
Don't you worry about a thing, mama. Cause I'll be standing.
When he says, cause I'll be, that cause I'll be stand, chromatic line in his voice and the piano chords are parallel major chords going down. In music theory, we call this planing, but this keeps going and going and going. And it's like this idea, hey, I'll write this song with this chromatic line. I'll have these little parallel planing chords going down. Eventually, we get to this really cool, bizarre, amazing post-chorus section.
Cause I'll be standing on the side when you check it.
Nicole, want to take a guess as to what he's singing there?
It's a descending chromatic scale.
Descending chromatic scale this time.
Wow.
Are you going to get mad at me if I say the high note is a C flat?
No, it's fine. I've come to terms with C flat.
It goes from C flat all the way down to F, a full six half steps. So he's gone even further this time. Let me let you hear that descending chromatic line. This might be just the extrapolation of that chromatic scale idea, but this descending melody he's singing is also accompanied by the chords that are going down parallel. He starts with one chord, moves the same chord down a half step, down a half step, down a half step, going, down, 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 which maybe is sort of just the natural outgrowth of what he's done with the piano part at the beginning of the song. But it's also referring back to this jazz harmony thing. So I don't want to get too far in the weeds, but I'm just going to put it out there. This is in some way based on what jazz musicians would call a tritone substitution. Do you know what a tritone substitution is?
No, I could probably make a couple guesses.
Maybe don't.
Okay, great.
Because we're not talking about it in this episode. Tritone substitution means a thing that maybe we'll talk about one day.
Cool.
But it means basically functionally the chord is going down a half step. That's not how it works and why it works, but it's a jazz move where your chord moves down a half step. Here's an example. This is Girl from Ipanema. You may have heard.
Mm-hmm.
This is a Latin jazz standard, right? This is a Jobim piece. This is the famous version by Stan Getz, Astrud Gilberto, and João Gilberto. How do you... João. My Portuguese needs some
work. Oh, I would just say
work.
Gilberto.
Yeah, Gilberto. Yeah, either way. It's the João that gets me.
João.
But anyways, here we go. The last two chords, that's a tritone substitution. The chord's going down.
Tall and thin and young and lovely. The girl from Ipanema goes walking and...
So when the chord moves down at the end there, that's our tritone substitution. Maybe Stevie's referring to that. Maybe not, but this isn't the only time he does this.
Hmm.
Well, just because the record has a groove, don't make it in the group.
So good.
Yeah, that's Sir Duke. So that's same era. That's the next album, mm-hmm. though, Songs in the Key of Life. Sir Duke has the same thing where the chord just goes down, 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 down. Except in Sir Duke, then it goes back up.
Well, just because the record has a groove, don't make it in the group.
So much to talk about with Stevie Wonder, but I just wanted to amplify one little thing where this chromatic line he's using to give this song a little bit of oomph, a little bit of gravity, grows a mind of its own. And then he uses it to control even the chords later in the piece.
Yeah, it's a cool song. And I think that it's like, it is interesting to layer this jargon on top of like what we feel when we hear the music. Like you feel this heaviness to the song, even though, again, like Stevie's reiterating this fact that we shouldn't be worrying about everything and that he's going to be with us if we are and help us out through it, which I think is just really nice. And it's cool that it's layered on top of this bit of like, I'm not going to say music theory, but this bit of theory, we'll just say.
If we're talking about chromatic scales, nah, it's not music theory.
No?
When we're getting into tritone substitutions, that's music theory.
Okay.
But notably, we're not really talking about
it. I've been told that we are not talking about tritone substitutions.
No, it's...
So I remember this song, one, the Stevie Wonder version, obviously, but this was a great song in the movie Sing. Tori Kelly gave a great cover of it, and they really...
It's super diva-y.
So good.
Which is a lot, considering how awesome a singer Stevie Wonder is. I'm not saying she's better than him, but like... She goes somewhere with it.
She does.
Sure.
Like the arrangement's a little bit different. They lean more on that like kind of Latin hook at the beginning and like really play that up in her version. And it's just she's hitting these really big notes. It's really powerful.
Everybody needs a change. A chance to check out the new. Yeah. You're the only one who sees the changes you take yourself through.
But her character is this giant elephant, and she is like really pensive and really scared and really full of worry throughout the whole movie. And then she like busts out with this huge, powerful rendition of this song that she kind of comes into her own in this moment in the movie. It's just a really powerful moment. And then Sing 2 obviously is pretty great. And I wanted to ask you, of all of those movies, so it's like Sing, Illumination is the studio that was Sing, it was Minions. It was like the Grinch movie, which has an awesome soundtrack, and the Lorax, and also Super Mario, the new Mario movie, and the Secret Life of Pets, both 1 and 2 were all from the studio. And I wanted to ask you to rank them, like what your favorites were.
You want me to rank my Illumination
yeah,
watching?
I'd like you to rank your Illumination favorites.
How many Despicables Me are there?
There were probably like 50.
50, because I've seen a couple of those. I saw Mario, of course. I saw the Sings.
Yeah.
I haven't seen The Grinch. I saw The Lorax, and I haven't seen the Pets one. So I'm going to arbitrarily decide I'm going to go off of the music itself.
Okay.
Because my favorite of all of those, I'm thinking, is probably the Mario Brothers movie.
Sure.
And you know what? I like Jack Black as a singer. I might say the Peaches. I think I'm going to put that one on top, followed by the Sing movies.
Cool.
Followed by gosh, I think I need to put the Minion stuff on the bottom because, man, the Minion singing, I just can't. My kids think it's so funny. I just can't do it.
I can't.
It's too much.
It's really interesting. Now that we're talking about this Illumination Studios and we're going on a tangent, which I'm into, all of them have really great soundtracks that most of their soundtrack, it's like covers of other songs, like almost all of them. Like the Mario movie has a pretty good soundtrack and there's some original stuff there.
They're jukebox musicals, a lot
they
of them.
They are.
Right? Like there might be a couple originals in the Sing movies, but they're jukebox musicals, which normally like on stage.
Yeah.
I'm not really a huge fan of jukebox. I want to see some original content if I go to see a musical.
Sure.
But I don't know, with animated, it's kind of like, hey, it's cool if my kid's suddenly into some song from 30 years ago.
Yeah, you know? it is cool. I mean, I think that the Grinch movie is my favorite and I encourage you to see it because the soundtrack's awesome. Pharrell Williams produced it and it's like really like some really cool songs. And then in the Minions movie, one of them I saw had all Beatles songs that were sung by the Minions.
Wait, how did they
get the rights? Like, do they need to pay them if it's minionized? If they're just meeping?
Do they need... Yeah, they need to pay them.
I bet they do. So what was their budget? Because like the whole...
High.
They're playing. Yes. So it's kind of like, Wild. What do you do in Illumination with these jukebox musicals?
Wild.
So
they're into it. Stevie Wonder. Do you know his name? His full name?
Steven Wonder?
No, it's Steveland.
Steveland?
I don't know if it's Steve Land. It looks like Stev Land, but I would say Steveland Hardaway Morris.
Ooh.
Wonder is not his last name. I wanted to ask you, first of all, any cool fake last name? I think Stevie, we don't have to go that far. That's not a stage name. His name's Stevie.
Mm.
Wonder, though, definitely a stage name. Any cool last name changes in pop musicians that you can think of?
I feel like David Bowie wasn't really David Bowie by birth, but...
David Bowie's David Jones by birth. And I think Bowie's a cool one. That's a cool sounding name. It's a
nice... Davy Jones, like, was taken.
Davy Jones is already a thing, right? Yeah. A nautical thing, I think, yeah.
No, he's from the Monkees.
David Jones is from the Monkees?
Davy Jones. Right? Fact check.
Isn't Davy Jones, like, Davy Jones's locker, like, a term for sinking in the sea?
I've never heard that before. It might be.
I think I need to brush up on my Monkees.
Someone correct us.
Yeah. Right in.
Yeah. Email us.
John Legend. I think Legend's a pretty dope fake last name.
That's not his real name?
No, Stevens.
John Stevens.
Or Stevie, maybe, but John Stevens, yeah.
Stevens.
I like Johnny Rotten. I think Johnny Rotten's a cool one.
Yeah, that's pretty boss.
Not his birth name.
Mm.
John Lydon or Lydon.
His birth name's Jonathan Rotten.
Jonathan Rotten, that's right. That's his Christian name. Okay, so Nicole, what would be your, not your full stage name, we don't need full stage name here.
Mm.
You would just be Nicole something, and you can't just go by Nicole. You need a fun last name. Where do you go?
You know what? I'm actually going to challenge you that I would change my first name.
No
I know
way.
I talk a lot about my Nicole pride in this podcast, but I've thought for years, if I could change my name, I already have one, that I'd be Sally. I think Sally's just a great name. I'd be Sally K.
That Sally K.
Name. That's my maiden name.
K.
K-A-Y-E, yeah.
K. Sally K. Wow.
And even sometimes I used to travel for my job and I'd get really bored and love to play games with people, which is why I began my study of psychology, because I realized I can monetize that.
Wow.
I would give that name to strangers and just like sing karaoke in different cities under the name Sally K.
Wow.
Just like for fun, because I was bored of existing.
Wow, Sally.
I think I love it. So if I ever like go off the grid and you need to find me, just start calling Hilton's asking for Sally K.
Got it.
And you'll find me somewhere. How about
Perfect.
You? What do you think?
How do I not just have it be Pop? Something like
Mark
that,
Pop.
Right? Poppany. I feel like Pop. That's as far as I got. It's kind of too obvious though, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I should just go with Sally K.
But no, that's my name.
No, not if I go there first.
Mark, let's read our outro credits, but do it in your like best teacher voice.
Ooh, best. So like inspirational moment. I'm always pretending like the thing I'm talking about is the most exciting, interesting thing ever. Nevermind the Music is hosted by me, Mark Poppany, and Nicole Vatcher. I also produce. Please be sure to subscribe and leave us a rating and a review.
And you know, guys, let us know what you think on social media. Your opinion is so important to us. We're Never Music Pod on all major platforms. You could also email us at nevermusicpod@gmail.com. And every so often, we're going to do a mailbag episode where we'll answer all of your questions. So please make sure to send us the best questions you have. Thanks for listening, guys.